Shalom Aleichem, everyone. Bruchim Habayim, and welcome this evening. Welcome, everyone, to our inaugural Soulful Fireside Chat. Delighted to have you this evening with us. Hope you're doing well, in good health, b'siyata d'shmaya. And I'm excited to welcome two very special guests this evening. It's an honor for our kollel to come together. I hope you're somewhere nice and warm. You have either a cup of tea or something. Right now in Chicago, it's about 14 degrees outside. So it's a great evening to be somewhere cozy with a sefer or a book or cooking for Shabbos. But it's an opportunity really for us as a community to once again re-engage in conversation with some of the important, influential, and inspirational personalities in our community and across the Jewish community. And that's why I'm delighted to begin this series together with someone who I've known for so long. It's hard to believe 20 years now, Liayin Hara, almost 20 years. A friend, a mentor, somebody who I can honestly say without whom I would not be here in Chicago, certainly not in this kollel, in this capacity, the Siyata D'Shmaya. And that is to welcome and introduce Rabbi Ari Rakoff. Rabbi Rakoff is now the Executive Vice President of the Religious Zionists of America, of Mizrahi here in the United States. Before that, holding significant positions both at the Orthodox Union and at Yeshiva University. And we go back quite some time, and it's a really exciting pleasure and honor to welcome Rabbi Rakoff back to Chicago. Bruchim Abayim, can you see us and hear us?
I can. Can you see and hear me?
I can't hear you yet, but we can.
You can't hear me? Can you hear me now? You can't hear me?
Not yet.
Okay. That's not good.
One second, let me see.
You can't hear? I'm going to come on my... Sorry.
Dialing it up. It's okay.
I'm in twice. You can't hear me? Okay.
One second, it's coming in on the other one.
Okay. We'll do it old fashioned style. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Now I can't again. Hold on, let me try something else. Let me put this away and see if I can hear you without it.
I brought my...
Can you hear me? Because I can't hear you yet.
I can hear you.
Oh, now I hear you.
Hi.
Welcome back. I brought my... Great to have you.
To see you.
What's the weather like on Long Island tonight?
It's, believe it or not, unusual day, 60 degrees and rainy.
Okay.
But I missed Chicago days. Those were frequent, and I wish I could be there with you. It looked very cozy there.
Yeah, thank God.
In the background.
It's supposed to be a fireside chat, but I didn't turn on the fireplace. We're just going to go without the smoke.
It's okay. I'm glad to be able to be with you, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's great.
Really an honor.
So maybe tell everybody, for those who don't know, just a little bit about what Mizrahi in the United States, what Mizrahi in America does. We have Religious Zionists of Chicago. People are familiar with World Mizrahi, but tell us, maybe share us a little bit, and then we could talk about how you got to where you got.
Absolutely. No, with pleasure. So first of all, really, it's an honor. Thank you, Tracy, for facilitating. And I feel like I'm right there with you. We spent a lot of time together. So, you know, maybe if it's okay, I wanted to actually start with, you know, you would ask me, you know, how did you get involved in Mizrahi? And I realized in thinking about it that actually, and I might embarrass you a little bit, Rabbi Brand, but, you know, hey, you know, this is what the advantage of Zoom. You know, you can make it up to me later, I think your followers and many students will appreciate. So my involvement actually goes back into the early 2000s, exactly as you said. We know each other 20 years. And, you know, one fine day, you know, a tall, slender, you know, bubbly, enthusiastic, Pied Piper is probably the best way to describe it, walked into my office. And, you know, we started to work on projects. He was from Baltimore. Some might, do people know this? The Baltimore part? You're from Baltimore?
They know the Baltimore part.
Fine, okay.
Rabbi Rocha was being very generous. I asked him, I said, I would like some work study opportunities. I'm looking for a mentor. So would you take me under your wing, please?
Absolutely. And so we put you to work on the Torah Tape Library, which little did we know became the origin of YU Torah. Which is true. And you could tell that story, I'm sure. And perhaps why you, Torah Mitzion Kolel, Shiurim are housed there, I would imagine. Yes? Okay.
Yes, sir. I think quite a few.
But it was during that period of time that it was those were really tough years. Those were the Intifada years. And it was at that time that, you know, I learned something. I learned the valuable, you know, really extraordinary lesson early on. And I'm glad I learned it then. That if you trust people and you get out of the way and you let people who know what they're doing do it, then things happen. And within what, 2-3 months of when we had met, we were on a plane, a charter plane to Israel, facilitated by students. It's 20 years ago, by students who are now world leaders, who are, you know, Rashi Kolel. I believe Rav Shannon Gelman was part of that group. Is that possible?
Yes, he was. Yes,
and
he was.
Tzipora was there as well. I'm not sure if they had the same last name yet. And it was really that period, because during that period of time, you know, of course, you know, the student activism on campus at YU is legendary. We actually took the idea from an idea that had been in existence years prior. And Operation Torah Shield was the brand. I was the chaperone facilitator, along with Rabbi Reichman, extraordinary people, Rabbi Yamin Levy, and, you know, as they say, the rest is history. But actually, what happened is it brought that opportunity brought us face to face with Rabbi Lam, with Rabbi Charlap. In fact, I believe to this day, Rabbi Charlap's picture of the three of us stands on his desk, I'm told. And it was really during that period that my own awareness and my own connection to religious Zionism and activism and connection really was born. And while we were, you know, a good 10 years apart, plus or minus, and still are, it was during that period actually that I was approached by Rabbi Lam and Rabbi Blau to join the Mizrahi RZA board. I don't know if you know this. I don't think I knew what a board was, but I have actually been on the board of RZA Mizrahi since then. So
that I know.
And it's something that at the time, you know, Hashkacha Pratis, you know, in many ways, and our paths crossed again, of course, because a second, you know, really, I would say primary connection to Mizrahi and RZA was through the Torah Mitzion Kolel, where I had the chance to meet Rabbi Matanky, the legendary Rabbi Matanky, my mentor, teacher, and who I'm very privileged now to work with as in his capacity as co-president of RZA. I don't know how he does it all. Every time he takes my call, I think about how many operations and systems and people he's engaging with in the Chicago area. And it's really stunning. But really, as I say, that was really the rest is history. But those are really the most profound experiences that brought us together, but also where my own involvement became more and more engaged and connected. So at that time, I was the youngest member of the board of RZA Mizrahi. I was the chair of the Young Leadership Committee. But I want to just say that my exposure to the Torah Mitzion Kolel, which was a privilege to be part of, in that it was about 2010, I would guess, right? Does that make sense? Torah Mitzion goes back to early 90s, mid 90s, and the Chicago Kolel was probably
one of
the first.
We started 2008.
Yeah. So when YU, it was a YU Torah Mitzion merger of a religious Zionist, you know, it was a blockbuster of two very dynamic organizations. Probably, I can admit now, I don't know if I knew at the time how significant it was, how formative it was, but I'm very proud to see, you know, how much you've done and how much you've accomplished. It's extraordinary. But that is the story. You asked the connection to Mizrahi, and in many ways, that story is the story of the organizations, if you will. I prefer not to refer to it as an organization. It's a movement. Organizations do things. movements stand for things. Torah Mitzion is not an organization. Torah Mitzion is a Merkaz Ruchani. The acronym of Mizrahi, which many do not know, is Merkaz Ruchani. That's what you have done. That's what you've established. And it's an extraordinary thing. I hear feedback about the Kol all the time. I know I'm preaching to the choir, in this case, to the orchestra head and conductor. But I know all those who are listening and are followers, perhaps in Chicago and beyond now in this environment. And I'm very, very honored to be here with you to talk about it and to share more about it as well.
Amazing. So, you know, that's kind of the backstory from your side. From my side, I think about it in terms of the Hakaras HaTov that I have to you for taking me under your wing all those years and, you know, so many experiences and opportunities that I had. I'll share this on the screen. I don't know how many people will recognize. That was when I think I was maybe a few pounds lighter, let's just say, maybe 20 or 30. But you look exactly the same as you did then. All right. I don't even know when that picture was taken or where it was taken, but wow. I figure you would get a kick out of it.
Look at you. You're armed with pictures. If I knew that, I would have brought some pictures too.
So you started back then. At that time, you were working in Max Stern Division of Communal Services in Yeshiva University, which was the precursor to the CJF, the Center for the Jewish Future. You moved on to work in the OU, working with so many people at NCSY, developing leaders, and now at the Mizrahi. So maybe just to tell us a little bit about what Mizrahi does now that we know that you, how you got there.
So it's interesting, you know, first of all, the RZC, and I want to acknowledge, you know, Rabbi Dr. Jerry Eisenberg, you know, who I've really gotten to know more recently, but is somebody who, you know, he's the Pied Piper of Mizrahi in America and has been keeping the pride, the passion. It's extraordinary. In fact, what's so interesting, and I want to even frame it through the lens of Chicago, the Torah Mitzion Kol, I remember very clearly observing at that period. I don't think I appreciated it, but now I do, 10 years later, the community in Chicago is very unique. And I'm not just saying that, you know, you won't hear me say that to a community X or Y tomorrow. You know, nowadays you could get exposed on these things, but I can say this definitively.
So Jerry
will correct me, or if he's on, he'll put it into the chat, but the history of RZC, of World Mizrahi, goes early 1900s. RZA, which was actually called Mizrahi USA at that point, 1913, 14. Again, Jerry will fact check me, but Chicago was right there. RZC goes all the way back and has never stopped. It has grown and grown, the conventions and gatherings. In fact, I remember the gatherings because there was a parallel, you know, culture between organizations, the Yad HaKran Academy, the various shuls. And I was amazed by that, actually. And in fact, I believe that's contributed to the Kol HaOlam's success because the foundations were so deeply intertwined. That's not a common situation in many other communities. It's sometimes more division, and then, of course, there's always 12 tribes, lots of division. But I think that so I don't have to describe it in great detail to all of you who are listening and watching, because you know it, you observe it. The Kol HaOlam itself is a manifestation. If I had to point to something and say, what is it? You could describe Shabbos, you know, as we know, or you could come to my house for Shabbos and have that experience. The blend of OYU and Torah Mitzion Kol HaOlam, putting the value, it's a value. It's not just it's not a label. We don't do labels. It's a value. You can measure a value in how we expend our time and how we expend our resources, our budget. That's a blueprint of our priority of what we stand for. So I could describe it and I could tell you a mission statement and I could tell you fancy words in the middle. What we do is what you do, and what you do is a model for what we're going to hope to do in many other places where it's not done. And that's not anyone's fault. It's just one of those situations where we're going through a renaissance in the world movement, which I hope everyone's aware of. Again, this is not an infomercial, and because organizations, movements rather do not do infomercials. I don't have an infomercial. I don't even have a picture to show. But what we do is what you do. What we do is ensure that the bond and the bridge to Israel is formative. It's in our davening. It's in part of our lives every day. We're heading into Asar B'Teves now. We have moments all the time where Israel and Eretz Yisrael, which is a foundation of our and cornerstone of who we are in our identity, is part of who we are. And the challenge, of course, for each of us individually, communally, is how that it gets expressed. So what we do is what you do. I know that might be a simple answer, but I don't mean it that way. I mean it very intentionally.
That's awesome. So I think one of the things that we need to think about as a community, and you said, Baruch Hashem, Chicago is a place where we have kept this at the forefront of our value system, but everybody knows that there are things that are important in the world that need chizuk, like the Gemara says in Brachos. So Eretz Yisrael, it needs chizuk, and our connection to Eretz Yisrael needs chizuk. And so how do we think about what we can do to nurture and strengthen that connection to Eretz Yisrael in Bifrat? But maybe before we think about the Prat, we could think about, you know, Begadol. Why is it important that we, as one of those 12 tribes that has a specific rooted and spiritual attachment to this Masorah, to people like Rav Kook, Rav Unterman, Rav Herzog, Rav Benzion Meir Chauziel, like these great Gaon and this Masorah of Torah Eretz Yisrael, of the religious Zionist orientation, why is that ideal so important to us? What does it mean?
So it's about, you know, the way we live our lives, you know, and, you know, as religious Zionist, centrist, you know, the labels begin to blur. But the way we live, am I on mute? Can you hear? Okay. The way we live our lives, we religious Zionism is about living in a real world, 2 feet on the ground. It's about living in a world of grays sometimes, of it's not binary, it's not black and white. And I think, you know, sadly, but in the very real way, we're seeing that, you know, exposed, and that is not on the agenda. You might have other speakers, perhaps, who have a political, platform. I do not. And
this is soulful fireside chats, no politics.
Soulful, no politics. Soulful chats above politics. But the core and the foundation and the values beneath the Gedola mentioned, and of course, I think it has to be stated, you know, from Gedaliah Dov Schwartz, Zatzal, of Beis Din influence. I had read, you know, some of the remarks, Reuven, that you shared, and Rabbi Matenki, and so many others. And I know there'll be a Shloshim soon, but he was the head of the Vaad HaKavod of the RZA, Mizrahi. So I feel the need to mention that as well. But the core values that we live by, it is challenging. You know, can you be a religious Zionist not living in Israel? How does that work? How do we keep it part of our lives in our tfilos in a way that we understand it, that we connect to it? And I think that it's really key to go to the foundation of it and to sort of see it as a continuum. Values is like a journey. We cannot say this is the binary way. You go to Israel and that's the only way that you can express it. The same way you wouldn't say that about other values. It's a process. It's the same way with Limud HaTorah, and you know, which I know is of course the foundation value of the Kollel itself. It's a process. It's a journey, and I would sort of point to that because I would point to myself in the same way. I was privileged to grow up in the school that Rav Soloveitchik founded. I did not appreciate my father dragging me to learn on Sunday mornings when we did not have school, to learn Mishnayos with him, but I do appreciate it now because that meant I had a chance to see with my own two eyes Rav Soloveitchik at a very elderly and advanced stage. I went to organizations and institutions that in Eretz Yisrael, YU, OU, as we've talked about, who are religious Zionists, of course, in their affiliation, their connection, their mission statement. But I'll speak personally in the way of answering your question. The question I started to ask myself, sometimes intentionally and sometimes not. I don't know that I asked it so skillfully and so carefully in the early 2000s when we met. You know, we just jumped on a plane and went, and it was a destination. It was a place. It's a place that of spirituality and connection. But if we were to self audit and to really look at our activities, what are my kochos and how am I connecting to Israel every day, every moment? Is it in my, do I have an Israel mindset where it's on my mind and I'm thinking about it and I'm listening to the news and I'm opening up a newspaper lahavdil? And where do you go first? You know, you pop into the sports section. Okay, so we just drafted two Israelis into the, if that's your thing, two Israelis into the draft. I didn't even know we had two. I thought we had one. The business section, people have different interests. And I think that's important to be broad in scope, of course, in the Torah realm and everything else. But I think that the question is a question of how do we form that connection individually, communally? And it's really important to recognize that there's a shift in that connection as well. Pre-1967, you know, those who remember even earlier, it was existential. At points when we interacted, it was existential. Time shift, and we have to always shift and evolve and grow and to keep asking that question, but we can't be static in that. We always have to be asking that question. I think that is the underpinning. You know, Rav Kook did not wear a kippah sruga, I don't believe. The extra now, I don't believe, right? I'm pretty sure not.
That's correct.
And I also don't believe that religious Zionism was born in 1903. It's a spiritual, it's a merkaz ruchani. It's a way of transporting who we are, wherever we are, which is, again, not binary. And that's where we, living here, wherever we are, have to connect to that and are responsible for taking lead on that. And I certainly will do my best to adopt that mission and put it to practice.
So you're talking about two things, right? You're talking about the value system and then the action item of asking ourselves and connecting in practical ways and davening and opening the newspaper in a certain orientation, in a certain focus. And yes. So there is the concept, there's the value, and then there's the action. And I wonder if both of those, the action and the ideal, the values, they come from a certain place that we, you know, our community, our collective neshama of our community, so you could say, or the neshamas, the people who identify with our masorah, is that we have this understanding of something beyond the prat, right? We can take care, we can check every box of religious observance, of Orthodox Jewish living, of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a prat level, wherever we might be, whether we're in Oceanside or in Skokie or wherever we might be on an individual level. But what one of the things that Rav Kook is challenging us and inviting us and begging us, really, and inspiring us to look to is to see ourselves as part of Am Yisrael. And what does it mean? And, you know, you talked about the question of being existential versus of strength, Baruch Hashem, is that that's also something for us to think about. Maybe we can feel connected in a way when it was an existential threat. The question of what does it mean to be part of Am Yisrael when things are not in an existential threat? What does it mean that we have an Am? You know, have we forgotten that over 2,000 years? And now what does it mean? You talked about Asar B'Tebes, the notion of a Churban. Well, what we had then, you know, we didn't have for the last 2,000 years. And now the Rebbe Shem has given us some sparks of that, some elements, some reishis of tzmichas. So how do we celebrate that value of the Am in an environment that we're not used to?
100%. And I think it's we take things for granted. It's been an entire year now since most of us, unless we have people, friends and, alumni up in Israel right now. I hope not. I hope they'll watch the recording. But outside of those listeners, none of us, I would venture to guess, have been able to go. And if we went, it would be like the old days of taking a boat, 2 weeks of quarantine, 2 weeks back here. We're not used to that. We, you know, we even commute to Israel back and forth. You know, which flight are you on? Which flight are you on? So I think we can connect to that in terms of not absence makes the heart grow fonder. And I think that certainly is something that I think about a lot. You know, it's been an entire year, and you know your kid is studying in Israel in one of the yeshiva seminaries. Used to be winter break is coming up in a few weeks. So where are you going? Where are you staying? So I think that that connection, in all ways, you know, from isolation and feeling a little less connected, is something that really resonates and just really highlights this value even that much more. So I want to share one more thing, actually, because identity is formed by ideas and familiarity. And I would say something, not as an accusatory way, you know, values are formed in the home, they're formed in experiences, they're formed in many different ways. But I do think, and I know the Kollel is at the forefront of this, but if I had to point to a challenge that I'm challenging myself with, so you can listen to me talk to myself this way, but I know so little. I found that I knew my 11th grade, now 12th grader, was taking an AP in Jewish history. So he was listening to me speak on the phone once, and he knew more facts and more ideas. And I started to realize that I think that And I'm not ashamed to share that. I think that, you know, being we have to become knowledgeable. You don't have to finish Shas tomorrow, right? I'm sure the Kol HaOlam promotes this core value of lifelong learning in every area, to the point that you can, in the time you're at, with whatever background you bring. And I think that we have to all look in the mirror. You know, if this is our identity, if this is what we stand for, if this is important, so what do we know? What are the schools that we're in teaching in this realm? And the answer is not enough. I don't want to say nothing. And it's not clear that it's all taught in the class. I don't believe that either. But it's something that it's certainly on my mind. It's something that I think is very much at the core of any ideology and identity formation, is how much are we learning? And I share that because I know the Kol HaOlam's core value is this, and you're modeling it. And I want to salute you for that, because sometimes we take those things for granted, but it's not. I think it's something that that's key. So would you give a one now? I could task you with teaching, but yes, I think your teaching should be spread further. The Kol HaOlam has that capacity, and I hope that's an opportunity for us to connect again.
So it's certainly something that has been meaningful to me. You know, you saw where I came from intellectually, spiritually, coming here to be with Chavrei Kol HaOlam, who over the years have come from Israel, from different yeshivas. It's totally changed my spiritual makeup, because my exposure to them and their Torah Eretz Yisrael, and they're introducing me to so many ideas of Rav Kook, even having learned for several years in a Hester yeshiva, over the years, like you said, it's a lifetime of learning. So making sure, it's one of our challenges as a Kol HaOlam, to make sure that we can continue to bring that to the community in a year in Corona when we don't have Israeli Chavrei Kol HaOlam. So we're continuing
to think about that.
Because we couldn't bring anybody due to the visa restrictions this year. So it's our first year without. So we actually are partnering with Torah Mitzion to create virtual programs. So we have some different Torah that are coming on video. We had a shiur not too long ago. We had a guest shiur. Now we're having one from Rav Rimon coming up before Tu B'Shvat. So trying to make sure that we keep those educational opportunities, because we have to nurture this value, this vision of this Torah and this Mesorah. It's like we said at the beginning, it's something that needs chizuk. Like everything, like Torah and Talmud Torah and davening, the Gemara says, but Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara says, brachos, these are things that need chizuk. So our connection certainly needs chizuk, and that's one thing that we're going to be focused on going forward. It's certainly something that I've benefited from by being in this environment, and we're happy to share that, and thanks to technology, it's something that we can. Any closing, concluding thoughts that you want to share with everybody that they should really remember and take away as they think about, everybody's thinking about, you know, this conversation and their own relationship to Israel and to Eretz Yisrael and the Klal and the Am. Any final thoughts that you think are important for people to keep thinking about?
So I think, you know, at the risk of repeating myself, that's not my intention. I believe that, I'll share one thought. You know, one thing that I found very surprising at first, but as time has, you know, evolved, and my involvement in World Mizrahi has obviously evolved with it as well. I was pretty stunned at the vibrancy, the contrast of vibrancy in other communities. I know another experience we shared was in Australia under the leadership, the able leadership of Rabbi Dr. Avery Joel, among many others, you know, leading communities around the world. You know, the community, the Mizrahi is the community, the shul, the school, the vibrancy. We're in 20 countries, which I have zero credit for. Rav Doron Perez and the dynamic team around the world. And is not just inspiring; it's spurred by things we take for granted. Anti-Semitism in Europe—it's rampant. We read about it. Do we connect to it? We have a certain—I would say—I say the word complacency, but even though I mean it that way, but not in a way from a negative, as much as I think we take for granted certain things, and that I think the situation in the world at large, we're all in this together, certainly I think inspires that. But I see this not just as a responsibility of connecting to Eretz Yisrael, but also all around the world. The communities are looking to us. I never thought about it. Uruguay, Chile, Argentina. I've been to some, I haven't been to others. they're looking, they're taking notes at the models of what we do, the ideas of what we do, how we do it. There's more Jews in Chicago than the whole United Kingdom. I don't know if everyone's aware of that. There's more Jews in Chicago than the United Kingdom. There's more Jews in Toronto than the United Kingdom. There's more Jews in Philadelphia than the United Kingdom. There's more members in my shul in Young Israel at West Hempstead than the entire city of Boston, which is where I'm from, with the OFC and connecting us. It's not the numbers are the most important, but it's pretty telling. And I think sometimes it's not so much complacency as much as, oh, that's the way it is. We have this restaurant, Romanian. Which one are we going to? Ken's Diner. I used to fly back and forth to Chicago when we started the Kollel. I used to get orders from all the Chicago, David Saltzman, Rabbi David Saltzman, my next door neighbor. I used to get orders in. But in other words, that's important. You know, you have to have the right thing to eat. But that's something that surprised me. I'm inspired by it. We have calls every other week around the world from Australia. They're up at 12 o'clock at night. We're up at 5-6 in the morning, the Am Yisrael is even broader with Eretz Yisrael as our focus. And it's something that I think the world, we should be teaching the Chicago Torah Tzion Kollel, you know, should reach out and facilitate conversation, not just in the greater Chicago area, but beyond, especially in this platform. That's the silver lining. And so Eretz Yisrael is in our focus, but our responsibility, Kol Yisrael or Eretz Yisrael is everywhere. And they're looking at our models. They're copying our model right now in Torah Mitzion Kollel, the Y Torah Mitzion Kollel. So they're watching it. And now they can view it too. In other words, may not have been to Chicago, but they're watching it. Right. And that's something that I just didn't appreciate, even though I'm not sure how it would have come to it, but I see it now. And let me tell you something, they're watching, and many of the other communities are more advanced than we are. And I'm taking notes as well. If I had to share something, I would share that. Let's not take for granted the enriched and extraordinary Jewish lives that we live. Let's take responsibility for that. I thank you for inviting me, to be part of this. It's really an honor.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. It's so beautiful. Personally, of course, obviously every time I have the opportunity to see you is amazing, but also to be able to raise this in our consciousness for our community and in general, to making sure that this continues to be part of our identity at the forefront. So thank you so much for the time. Great to see you. Regards to
thank you. Thank you. Regards as well.
All right. Have
thank
a great
you for
night.
Inviting me.
Bye. Great to have you. Take care. Ah, Rabbi Rakoff, special chaver. And our special guest tonight, another chaver of mine. Can you see me and hear me?
I think. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes. Great. Ruchim Aboyim. Wonderful to see you. Rabbi Yechiel Kalish. I think we could still call you a Chicagoan. I'm hope, as someone who is, I guess, a Tzigin Akimeter to Chicago, a Tzigin Akimeter in some respects, but I could still say that I have the opportunity to be in the same community, at least at this for these 5 minutes, with Rabbi Yechiel Kalish. And, you know, we're thinking tonight, we're getting together with people in the community to have fireside chats, to have conversations that are soulful, that are ruchnius, and to do that in the lens tonight, really about thinking about Am Yisrael. And for those who do not know, Yechiel Kalish has been a trailblazer in Europe. Maybe they would call it as a shtadlon or askonos, in advocacy, in representing and advocating for the Jewish people, for Klal Yisrael, for individual Jews here in Chicagoland, in the state of Illinois, across the United States, and in the world. And so thinking about what it means to be a Ben Torah, a Ben Aliyah, someone who's connected to the Ribono Shalom, and living in this world, to have you share a few thoughts with us tonight and share some of your very busy time. It's wonderful to have you. I don't know if I should share what your next step is, or if you want to share that, or if it's still a secret.
Someone told me it's pretty out there.
It's pretty out there. You know, someone said, you know, a secret is something you tell only one Jew at a time. That's the definition of a secret. So soon to be at the forefront of Hatzalah, which is a credible opportunity that we wish you tremendous hatzlacha in.
Thank you.
So I don't know if you're headed back to Far Rockaway sooner or later, but we're going to certainly miss having you here. But maybe you could just open up and share with us a little bit about, as someone who is a Ben Aliyah, who's been a Ben Torah your entire life, grew up here in Chicago, learned, and has come back to the community and been a part of so many different areas of Askanos. How do you see your neshama expressed in the work that you do, whether it was in the State House? Some of you who are watching, I would hope most of you already know that he served with distinction as a state representative of ours, but also in your general advocacy. How have you seen that develop?
It's a great question. I don't know if I've thought about it in that lens. As a member of the legislature, which is very different than being an advocate or an askin, right? A shtadlin, as you said. When you're a shtadlin, when you're an askin, when you're an advocate, so you have a very clear mission, right? You have a very clear mission. As directed to you by the Gedolei Torah, or by individual board members, et cetera, whatever it is that you're doing, it's a very clear mission. So, you know, your soul, your neshama, can come out in your interactions with others, right? When you walk away from them, and you know, they say to another individual, you know, that really touched me, or you know, the way he said something really, inspired me. Right. So, you know, we always look for those words because you want to be an Or L'Amim. You want to be an Or L'Goyla. There's something that's supposed to be different about individuals who spend, you know, 12 to 15 years in a yeshiva setting. Right. I mean, that should have some impact on our ability to interact with others in a different type of way. But as a legislator, somebody who represents 108,000 people, many of whom are not Jewish, so your mission is much more complicated, it becomes a lot more challenging. I was the most identifiable Jew, right? I always used to joke, you know, like it's pretty obvious, right? In the legislature.
First rabbi.
First musmuch, possibly in the country. We're still debating over somebody. But we're going to give it to him first, you know, so I'll be the second. But the first one in Illinois. So anytime a Jewish issue would come up, you know, it was a Jewish holiday, Purim or Yom HaShoah or Yom HaZikaron, anything that was going on, I was chosen to make the speech on the House floor. And that's where I think, you know, some of my neshama came out. When I started crying, reading the story of Izzy Stark, as he was being brought to the camps on the House floor, it took me by surprise, the emotion that I felt. So yeah, there's definitely neshama that comes out.
Amazing. So you mentioned before that you've had the opportunity to interact with some great gaonim, tzaddikim, gedolim, whose Torah insight has informed how you've gone about interacting with various political leaders, you know, and we exchanged a little bit before about the number of Minsker, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the number of Minsker, yet another Chicagoan. Yes. Shout out to all of us Chicagoans. You know, he had a tremendous outsized influence in many ways, in many realms, and his passing this year as Petiria left a big void. Maybe you could share a little bit about your personal interactions, because I know you had a very special kesher with the Nova Minsker.
Yeah, I used to, you know, there was a few years back, the Nova Minsker Rebbe spoke at an Aguna dinner. And one of the honorees called me the day after. He was upset with some of the things that the Novo Minsker Rebbe said. In other words, some of the topics that he had chosen to speak about at the dinner that night. And he said, you know, I have family there, and you know, this is what he chose to speak about. So I listened, you know, as a rabbi, you know that you have to do a lot of listening, right? I listened. And then I shared with him, I said, you know, for a period of time, I had the zchus to drive the Rebbe around, okay? From mundane doctor's appointments to, you know, important meetings with other gedolim, to back and forth to yeshiva for a little bit of time. So those were unbelievable opportunities. I saw the Rebbe during the Tkufa in every possible situation, every possible human interaction that you could possibly want to see another person. I witnessed the Rebbe. I witnessed him opening his mail. I witnessed him eating breakfast. I witnessed him going to the doctor. I witnessed every possible. I witnessed him getting angry. I witnessed him getting happy. Every possible interaction, and in every interaction, he was a gadol. He was a gadol at all times. Sometimes I would say he was even a malach, you know, in certain situations. How he just controlled himself and had complete and total control at all times. And I said, you know, I'm in the car and I'm with the Rebbe, and he is getting calls from all the gedolim in the world, not just in America. And many times I hear him, you know, giving advice or talking something out. So I said to this person, I said, you know, the Rebbe, I would guess, is involved with 50 to 75% of every major shaila that's going on in Klal Yisrael at this time. If he chose to talk about those topics, it's probably because that's what's happening. And, you know, that's who he was. He was so practical. He was very special. You know, during my last personal interaction with him, was, you know, we had some very serious shilas that we were going through in the legislature. And I had suggested an approach to dealing with a situation that could be personally harmful to me, but could be good for the community. And the Rebbe started crying. He said, what about the neshama of my yechiel? And he used those words, my yechiel. You know, like, what about the neshama of my yechiel? Like, there were other people in the room. The whole place was bawling. You know, you want to know about a man who has a neshama. You want to know a man who saw, you know, the inside the soul of another human being. You know, that was Naaman's grip. He was just...
And how did he transcend or balance, you know, the big ideas and the practicality? Because you were dealing with the lamaisa, like the votes and the individuals. So how do you see him? How did he help?
Well, he was ultimately
bridge that.
He was a Pisic. He was very, very much a Pisic. You know, but at the same time, he was a manhig, and he had shimush. His father was a rebbe. He was very close to Rav Palm. He was close to Gdolim from a previous generation. He was very close to Rebbe Yisvei, even though they disagreed in approaches to different issues. So he had both the ability to look at the big picture and really dial it down, like really dial it down. If you read his farm, is you know Emes Liakov, he has, you know, in his breadth of knowledge was unbelievable. But you see him, you know, break down a sugya down to its core, and that's how he dealt with every aspect of life, you know, and he had that ability really to hone in and help you, you know, really. For the individuals who had these chus to be close to him, he helped us. You know, Rav Avraham Chaim Zechrono Livracha, the Rashi, the Tells Rashiva Zechrono Livracha here in Chicago, he didn't make a decision without calling the Rebbe. You know, he called on every big communal decision. He just called the Rebbe to talk it out, and it was, you know, he had a huge impact on this community. Many people probably didn't even realize it.
Wow. So one of the things that you have the great schus of in your various roles is chesed. You know, sometimes it's professional chesed, sometimes it's an avocation of chesed, you know, when you were in New York and then here. And, you know, how can you share with people a little bit about how chesed has shaped your life or the chesed that you see in the community that the tzibur is doing? Because you have witnessed some extraordinary chesedim.
Klal Yisrael is awesome. Klal Yisrael is awesome. You know, there was a there was a, I don't remember what it was. It was years back. I don't know, 10, 11 years ago. It was a Rabbanim meeting that I had attended. And it was depressing. Whatever it was that we were discussing was depressing. And I decided I was going to slam my fist on the table and scream, Klal Yisrael's awesome. And I started sharing at this Rabbanim meeting what it was. And I was a staff member. I wasn't smicha, but I was not one of the Rabbanim. And I just started sharing all the different amazing things that Klal Yisrael does. I mean, look, Chicago is a great example. Any type of need that someone is having, there is an organization of some sort dedicated to meeting that need, right? You know, in terms of, you know, the Chicago Center for Torah and Chesed, the different kailim, your kailil, you know, all the different shuls and everything that's going on in the shuls, the way people care about each other. I mean, look what's going on during the corona, how people are helping each other with parnasa and dropping off packages for food. And I mean, it's just like, it just doesn't end. And, you know, we witness, and Hatzalah, obviously, I'm very proud of Hatzalah, and it's really an amazing organization. But, you know, as somebody who is involved in the broader world as well, you know, in a leadership position in the broader world, I will tell you that nothing like what we have exists. Nothing, right? The large charitable organizations that we'll see in, you know, in the press as making an impact, so to speak. I mean, that's a Shabbos, you know, appeal in one of our shuls, right? I mean, it just they don't even come close to the giving numbers or the, you know, there's a food pantry in the district somewhere. I don't want to mention it, but they're very proud of this food pantry. And they wanted to show me the food pantry and, you know, and the number of people that they served. And I'm expecting, they're building this up, and I'm expecting this big food pantry. So I go to the food pantry, and I'm just like, whoa, right? This is not as large as I thought it was going to be.
It wasn't the Ark or the Chesed Fund.
No. So I decided, right, maybe it was a little foolish. I decided I'm going to invite the heads of that food pantry to see both of the other ones, right? That you just mentioned, right? To see the Ark and see the Chesed Fund. They were blown away because you could put six or seven of theirs into, you know, the two that I described. And both of those food pantries, both the Ark and the Chesed Fund, service anyone who comes, which is very special. So the chesed in our community, Klal Yisrael, is awesome. I mean, look at Shasharet. Look at all the different types of organizations that exist within Klal Yisrael. It's just very, very special. So yeah,
it's beautiful.
We're lucky. But I will tell you since you're, you know, this is a kailul event and you're a Rosh Kailul. But I'm
wearing a sweater, so we could be. I'm wearing a sweater sitting in the living room, so it's different
sura. Rav Aaron Cutler is famous for saying that the chesed will be the downfall of Torah, right? That chesed will be the downfall of Torah. And, you know, what Rav Aaron meant is that in their time, as these chesed organizations were growing, and Klal Yisrael has, I mean, we're the Bnei Avram, right? So chesed is just such a strong part of our DNA. People were throwing money at chesed organizations, but Torah couldn't grow, right? They couldn't raise money for a kailul. They couldn't raise money for a yeshiva. So, you know, we would always, you know, try to encourage people that, you know, the Torah is the primacy. Where do we get this innate nature to give so much? It definitely comes from the Torah. So, you know, whoever's watching, make sure you give the money to the kailul.
And that's Sala, Matzal Nefashas, and that's Sala.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Yes. So maybe we'll switch gears for the last couple of minutes that we have and really focus on a core midah, which I think, especially in our community and especially in our time, is a unique challenge. And that's the midah of bitachon. Because in our community, we emphasize the role of ishtadlus, the importance of pursuing a parnasa, pursuing education, pursuing the scientific solutions to whether it's COVID or other health issues, all kinds of things. So we're focused on being mishtadel. And yet we have responsibility and an opportunity and that connection to bitachon. So how do we create a space for hishtadlus and create a space for bitachon? How do we make sure that we're having the appropriate hishtadlus and appropriate bitachon? You know, you were out there for so many years and you're continuing to be mishtadil, and yet you have bitachon. So how do we, whether it's related to a person's individual parnasa, whether it's related to the coronavirus that we're struggling with, whether it's the, you know, the global issues that you're advocating for and dealing with, what are some perspectives that we need to think about when we come back to ourselves and say, hey, yeah, we've done a lot of hishtadlus, but where's bitachon? Where does that fit in?
So I'll tell you two mahalchim that I received from Gedolim on this shiloh. I went to see Rav Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, Zecheinu Livracha, who was one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Panovich. So I think this was in 2006 that I went to, because he passed away in 2008. I think it was 2006. I went to see Rav Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, and I said to Rav Michal Yehuda, I've been in the Aguda now, I don't know, I think I was there 4 or 5 years. We've had tremendous tremendous hatzlacha. I said, let me go back to Kailal. I said, because I see very clearly that we would create a plan for a certain project. The plan would go completely awry, but we would be successful anyway. So obviously it has nothing to do with me. I said, it's just so clear that it's not me. So it's clearly a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So let it be.
That's when you were in National Aguda?
That's when I was National Aguda.
Yes.
Right. So I made know,
exactly. Right. For those don't know, Rabbi Kalish was both in the Aguda here in Illinois and then in Midwest and then National. Yeah.
Correct. I just made the transition. So he he got all upset. He got all like agitated. He was like ready to jump out of his seat. And he went and he grabbed the chumash, and he didn't grab the chumash. His grandson, who has since become a good friend of mine, Reuven Karlinsky, grabbed the chumash and gave it to the Zeta, gave it to the Roshiva, and he said to me the following part. It says that by creation. It says in the second parak in Bereishis, ve'ed yalem in ha'aretz, ve'odam ayin la'avodas ha'adama, right? And Rashi says, right, that odam ayin la'avodas ha'adama, what does it mean? It hadn't rained yet because la'avodas ha'adama, because there was no man to work the field. So, and Rashi says, ve'ein makir b'tayvosan shel geshamim, right? Right, that's Rashi. Rashi being makir b'tayvosim shel geshamim. He says, your job isn't to do. Your job is to tell the story. He says, you think your job is to do? He says, you're the only one that can see the Yad Hashem and what's happening. Whatever it is that a person is able to witness Yad Hashem, it's their responsibility to tell that story. Hashem has chosen you to tell this story. So he says, it's not for somebody else. He says, you're the one who has to tell the story. He says, you have to do it. So that was one mahala. So, you know, and so okay, all right. that's my role. And Baruch Hashem, I've been telling stories. And we have crazy stories to tell. And the Reshiva Zecheinu Livracha, Rav Avraham Chaim, used to say the following. And this is just so important as it relates to bitachon. It's so important as it relates to hishtadlus. The Rosh Yeshiva would say, pshat in hishtadlus is that you are working so hard and you put everything into it that when you look back, you say only Hashem could have made that happen. He said, that's Pshat Neshtablus. Pshat Neshtablus is working so hard and so intently that when you look back, only a Kodesh Baruch Hu could have given me the Kayach. Only a Kodesh Baruch Hu could have made that happen.
That's beautiful. I never heard that idea. Fascinating.
Yeah. So that's what drives me, and I know it drives a lot of his Talmidim, because there are some dark times. Chazer over those psukim.
Because I think that helps us, because you know we want to pursue that hishtadlus, but we also need to nurture that bitachon, right? This whole, you know, the pandemic that we're in, it's sometimes very confusing because, you know, we want to pursue all the scientific avenues. We're going to observe all of the regulations. And for those who are watching, we still need to wear masks, even if the vaccine is coming, right?
Like those pieces.
Not right, not over Zoom. No one's in my living room right now. I don't know
if you're in the office.
but the ability to say, you know, there's the base for bitachon, you know, how to make sure that becomes part of the conversation. Yeah. That the davening is part of the hishtadlus as well. I don't know. Did you ever get caught davening when you were down in Springfield? How did that work out? Just about,
that didn't
close with that.
It is both positive and negative. I got this is a mincha. Minchas, you know, it's usually not a problem with Meyer or Shabbos. It's usually mincha. And I'm on the floor, and the floor is ki'ilu. You're in a chasma hall. There's no windows. There's no. You don't know what time is it, you know. And they're pumping oxygen in the room, so you don't fall asleep, and because we could be going for hours at a time. So I look at my watch, and I'm close to Rabbeinu Tam, right? And I am Dom Minfa. So I had to go to the back. On the floor, I couldn't go off the floor. So I went to the back of the floor and I started davening. So of course, you know, there were votes going on, and I couldn't move. So the parliamentarian got very upset. He was just like, what is going on here? Like,
well, this is not a shtiebel. What are you doing over there?
He couldn't fathom what I was doing, why I wasn't answering anybody, because there was nowhere to hide, right? But there was this woman, a staffer, a lifer. You know, she's got to be 55, 60, been in Springfield working at the Capitol forever. And she said to the parliamentarian, he's praying. And you better hope he's praying for all of us.
Fein gesagt.
Exactly. She was great. And every time I saw her, I said, are you praying for me, Rabbi? I say, yes, I'm praying for you.
That's awesome.
So, the few minutes when the parliamentarian was not happy, it was not exciting.
I love it. It's great. So, wonderful to see you. Bimatzliach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should continue to give you the koach and the siyata d'shmaya to enable all of us to live, to thrive, to grow through all of your work on behalf of Klal Yisrael, on behalf of the Jews of Chicago, on behalf now, please God, of Hatzalah. And hopefully we'll continue to see you in person on a somewhat regular basis. Thank you for taking the time and just continuing to inspire all of us. So great
anytime
to see you.
Thank you for inviting me, really. Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi.
Great to catch up. Thank you so much for coming. Yes. Good evening. Thank you for coming. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. It's been hopefully an enriching and inspiring evening for everyone who has had the opportunity to be here, who will be watching this. And please, God, we're going to continue joining together, coming together, let's say, about every other Thursday night over the coming weeks. So stay warm and stay well.